is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Sean McDonald, boys varsity basketball coach at University School in Cleveland, Ohio. You're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. 12:01 tip tonight, Jay.
Yep. You know, it is what it is, man. It is what it is. That's what I'm going to say.
Even in the off season, we can't quite get in under the finish line, under the tape.
Yep. Like I said, it's not like I was going to go to bed anyways, right?
So there you go.
That's what we'll look
better thing to do than to sit up all night and talk NBA?
After 2 weeks after the season ends. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So, first thing we're going to talk about, Mike, is Stan Van Gundy. We predicted it right. He's the coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. Good hire, bad hire, initial reactions. You go, Mike.
Good hire. Glad he's not hired to be a front office person. I think that ship has sailed, hopefully, for team owners, that you're not going to see anybody hired to be the coach / GM ever again, or at least anytime soon. And I think Stan Van Gundy's a good basketball coach. I think when you look at what he can probably bring to the table in New Orleans, the one glaring, obvious weak spot that they had last year was defensively. I think overall they were pretty solid offensively. And when Zion came back, they were incredible offensively. So they need somebody to improve their defense, to get those guys, especially the young guys, Brandon Ingram and Lonzo and Zion, to buy into focusing on the defensive end of the floor. And Stan Van Gundy's a guy who has a track record in the league. He's a guy who's had success, took the Magic to the finals at the expense of the Cavs back in 2009. And despite the lack of success that he had in Detroit, I think you could more attribute that to his GM skills as opposed to his coaching skills. He's got a good reputation throughout the league. I know we talked about how much we enjoyed listening to him commentate, and clearly he's a guy that's been in the NBA for a long time. He's one of those, I don't want to say retread coaches, but he's one of those guys that's been in multiple places. But I'd say he's been more successful, generally speaking, than the average NBA coach. I was fine with the hire from the Pelican standpoint, and I think he'll do good things for New Orleans. Is he the guy that ultimately takes them to an NBA title when and if they're ready for that? I don't know, but I think you'll see a marked difference in their defensive play next year compared to what they were this previous season. And if they do that, and they continue to progress the way they have offensively. You get Brandon Ingram continuing to get better. You get Zion healthy and out on the floor. You get Lonzo back to what he was pre-COVID-19 interruption, and he's playing better, which he was prior to the league shutting down, and then he was obviously terrible in the bubble. Got to figure out what they're doing with Jrue Holiday. Do they trade him? Do they keep him? They still have Jackson Hayes from Cincinnati Moeller here that they kind of mothballed in the playoffs and in the seeding games, didn't see a lot of action. And I think it's a good hire.
Yeah, I think it's a good hire too. As long as he doesn't trade for Blake Griffin or something, I don't need him to do that. Like that wouldn't be a good move. Every time I see him coaching, I get flashbacks to 2009. It was just
he was kind of the forerunner. I mean, you think about that team, and it was a very, very modern. Yeah, I mean, it was a very modern team. I mean, certainly before that style of play where basically they were playing a four-out, one-in style with Dwight down in the paint and surrounded by 4 3-point shooters. And really, there was nobody else in the league doing that, and it was pretty innovative at the time. And maybe it was innovative because Stan Van Gundy designed the team that way, or maybe that was just the roster and personnel that he had, and he figured out a scheme that could maximize their players. But certainly – Van Gundy has proven himself to be a good, solid NBA coach. And I think that he's going to get more out of that team than what Alvin Gentry was able to get out of it last year. Again, provided that the key members of that team, Zion being the most important, that those guys stay healthy. I think if they do that, I think you're going to see them take a step forward. And now, whether that means that they're a playoff team next year, who knows? Because as we know, the West is just ridiculous in terms of how good those teams are, and good luck trying to sort out who's going to finish where in the Western Conference next year, because depending upon what happens with Minnesota and the number one pick, and if that player turns out to be any good, and where all these teams, I mean, really, again, any one of these teams is going to be able to talk themselves into, hey, we can make the playoffs as the 7th or 8th seed, because the West is just loaded. So who knows? The Pelicans could be better and maybe still not even make the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, that's true. That's really, really true. And I think the thing we have to think about too is, and we're going to get into this conversation, is we don't really know what next season's going to even look like. I think the fact that Van Gundy has a good track record, and like you said, he has a good reputation, I think they're going to buy in right away. Not that Alvin Gentry didn't have a good reputation, but
Gentry was certainly always considered to be more of an offensive coach, kind of came up underneath D'Antoni and the 7 Seconds or Less Suns.
Yep.
So that was kind of his – I'd say he was more known throughout the league as an offensive coach rather than a defensive coach. And I think that when you're looking at what held New Orleans back, it was clearly the defensive side of the ball. And I know it's been said that Lonzo and – Brandon Ingram really regressed on defense from where they had been the previous year with the Lakers, where both were considered to be at least average defenders, and maybe in the case of Lonzo, above average. And last year, they just, for whatever reason, they weren't up to that same level. And so I think it's going to be key for Stan Van Gundy to come in and unlock the defensive potential of that team. And Zion, I don't know. I don't know what his ceiling is as a defender, because he's not super long, but yet because he's so bouncy and athletic, he still can be a deterrent at the rim and block shots and protect the paint. But it just seems like last year he became indifferent to the defensive end of the floor. And we all know that if you're going to win titles and Zion's going to become one of the 10 best players in the league, that that he has to buy in on the defensive end of the floor. And the sooner you can get him to buy in, meaning the sooner in his career you can get him to buy in, the better off that franchise is going to be. So hopefully Stan Van Gundy can get that message across to him and Lonzo and Brandon Ingram, and then that team will be on its way.
Yeah. My next transitioning into the talk for next season, there's been reports, speculation that the season's much closer than we ever would have anticipated, Mike. I think we talked about it last week. Was it last week we talked about it? And we said maybe Martin Luther King Day, but it's sounding more and more likely that by the end of this week, they're going to have it ironed out that training camp starting December 1st and the season potentially starting December 22nd. I don't know if this is rushing things too fast, in my opinion. Maybe I know they don't want to give up. Maybe they don't want to give up the Christmas Day games. But here's my question, Mike. If they get this season back, do we really expect to see players like LeBron playing in Dame 1 or someone who's was in the bubble for that whole experience, like the Heat and the Lakers and, you know, who they the Nuggets are. They're young. They can handle it.
The but Celtics. Like, so, yeah, so your final four was the Celtics, Heat, Nuggets, and Lakers.
Like,
so
could you imagine, like, a longtime vet coming right back after being in the bubble? And like, the typical offseason is normally 140 to 150 days, and this is going to be like not even 60 days. Like, I don't know. I think this is I don't want to say dangerous almost, but it almost is for these vets. Just my opinion. I don't know.
Okay, so a couple things. One, I think back to when we were first talking about when is the next season going to start. So that was almost when this season resumed, is when you and I first started talking about, okay, well, now that we know when the 19-20 season is going to end, we started talking about the 2021 season. And my point right from the beginning, and I'm not trying to claim credit for this, but as more and more information came out, it sort of went away from what my original thought was. And my original thought was that the league didn't want to give up those Christmas Day games, because it's just historically been such an important point in the NBA season. It's a day that the NBA has always had completely to itself, with, you know, what used to be two or three games and now has built its way up to a full five game schedule on Christmas Day. It just seemed like that was a natural sort of kicking off point for the league. And it seemed unlikely to me that they'd want to give it up. And yet, as we went along and we were going through the bubble, you heard less and less talk about that, and you heard more and more talk about they're going to push it back to January, they're going to push it back to February, they might even push it back to March, mostly because they wanted to get fans in the stands and be able to get that revenue that they lost, obviously, when this whole thing shut down. But I think it's becoming more and more clear to both the league owners and the commissioner's office that you can wait till March, you can wait till May, and you still may not be able to have full arenas at that point. And so I think at some point, and again, I don't know exactly when this shift occurred, but at some point the league started thinking about, okay, the 2021 season is going to be fouled up no matter what. And it's not going to be perfect. But what we want to do is we want to have ourselves set up for the following season, which would be the 21-22 season. And so I think what they've done is, they've decided, how can we best maximize whatever we can squeeze out of this next season in order to set ourselves up for what they hope is going to be a return to normalcy in 21-22. And we talked a little bit about this last week. I think one of the things that they discovered clearly with the bubble is they don't want to go up against football in the fall.
Oh, they got killed.
Right. So any thought that they may have had of pushing the schedule where the NBA finals were going to take place in September or maybe even August, I think they found that they didn't want to compete with football. And eventually, I don't even know if they want to compete. Sounds crazy to say, but I don't even know if they want to compete with preseason football in August. So you have that. And then you also just have the fact that people are watching less TV in the summertime. And so you think about July and August, and people just aren't, they're just not in front of their TVs as much. And even if you want to watch an NBA game, if you're a casual NBA fan and it's light out until, you know, 9:30 at night and it's warm and there's just more things to do. And so I think they sort of realized that, hey, the schedule that we had before in terms of where it falls on the calendar is probably the sweet spot of where we want to be. And once they came to that realization, then they said, okay, what we have to do is we have to figure out how to get this next season in so that the 21-22 season can fall back onto its regular schedule. And in order to do that, you can't push back until January, February, March, because again, they want to try to get as many games in as possible. So already I know they're talking about more back-to-backs or 4 and 5 nights or things in order to be able to get 72 games.
The load management's going to be out of control, Mike.
Well, there's going to be a lot of load management. And I think, you know, your point and kind of what you were talking about in terms of, is LeBron going to be playing in a lot of these games? How are those teams that made it to the Final Four, the conference finals, how are those teams going to react or feel, or how are they going to utilize load management with their players? And I think the answer to that question is that those teams certainly are going to approach it differently than a team like, let's say, the Cavs, who haven't played since last March and whose players, I'm sure, are just dying to get out on the floor and be ready to play. So for any team that wasn't in the Orlando bubble, or any team that was eliminated before the playoffs of the Orlando bubble, those teams certainly are more than happy with starting on December 1st.
So what you're saying is when the Cavs start 5-1, we shouldn't get too excited.
Well, I think you're going to see some weird, I would guess, especially at the beginning of the season, you're going to see some weird outcomes because of who's playing and who's not and who's sitting out. And again, if you end up going back to playing 4 games in 5 nights or whatever it might be, now maybe they're going to go to the pod structure where you go to LA as a team and you play the Lakers twice, you play the Clippers twice, and you're done with LA. You know, you go there for 5 days, you play back-to-back with the Clippers, day off, back-to-back with the Lakers, and then you go home, or you continue on your road trip or whatever it's going to be. I think there's a lot of talk that that's what's going to happen, is more of a baseball style of schedule where you go into a city and play multiple games, rather, and that'll help to, you know, maybe ease as much as you can ease the players' bodies into playing back-to-back or 4 and 5 nights. I think if you eliminate the travel piece, or at least cut down on the travel piece, you make that somewhat easier. But I think you're divided into two camps. I think teams that were not in the bubble, teams that were eliminated prior to the playoffs, and even teams that went out in the first round of the playoffs, I think those teams, for the most part, at least from a player perspective, like, those teams will be ready to go. Those players will be ready to get started on December 1st. Now, if I'm one of those teams that made the conference finals or made the finals, I think that becomes a different story in terms of recovery of those players' bodies, in terms of the mental fatigue that it took to be in the bubble that long and then bounce back. So I think there's a lot of things that go into, I think there's a different perspective depending upon where you ended up being eliminated and how long it's been since you played. And then I have one more point to make, but I'll let you react kind of to what I said, and then I'll jump back in with the other point that I have.
Oh, I thought you were going to say make your other point. Go make your other point, and then I'll react to it. Go ahead.
Okay, so my last point is that I think the other thing that is going to obviously be affected is when you start talking about this compressed offseason where you're going to have the draft, and then a couple days later you're going to have free agency, and the free agency period is going to be shorter, and you're trying to evaluate draft picks and make trades and do all these things. So I think that teams that are sort of already set, that kind of have their team and are satisfied with their team or really don't have moves to make, like, those teams are going to have, I think, a little bit of an advantage. Teams that were looking to remake their roster or maybe make a dramatic move or consider what they're going to want to do on the trade front, I think those teams, because there's such a shortened window in order to do those team building things, I think those teams could be affected. And again, we don't necessarily know which team fits into which category, you know, because we don't obviously know what teams' plans are, but teams that are bringing back their entire team, you would think that those teams would have an advantage in this case because they kind of know what their roster is and who they have, versus a team that maybe is looking to have a little bit of a makeover might be hurt by the shortened typical offseason, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I think my big thing is I want to talk about the compressed timeline that they have, because, you know, the reports are that the draft is happening on the 18th and that free agency would supposedly then open up on the 21st is what I saw. Is that what you saw as well?
Yes.
So the 21st. So really that gives teams, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of teams have been planning. I mean, heck, if the Cavs are making free agency moves, they've had all the time in the world to plan, right? I mean, right. Geez.
Yep.
So, but see, the other teams, it's these teams that just finished. Like, what's going to happen with Dwight Howard? What's going to happen with Rondo? What's going to happen with Carmelo? That's another one. You know, is he going to stay in Portland? What's going to happen with all these other players? I think, you know, lots of interesting things that are going to happen, and it's going to be kind of fun to have it happening in a weird time in November. I don't know. You know, you're kind of in the doldrums of the NFL season, and yes, the NFL is still king. Let's be honest here. It is still king. But it'll be nice to have some NBA stuff going on, you know, gathered around the Thanksgiving dinner with maybe your three family members, because you shouldn't really get into huge family gatherings right now. Right, Mike? I don't know. Whatever people
are
doing.
So.
Whatever people are doing, you know.
Who knows? Everybody's got their own feelings and thoughts.
They'll be able to check their phones. Pass the turkey. Oh, my gosh. Look who Carmelo signed with. Hey, can I get some of that gravy? Oh, no way. Rajon Rondo's going here. I don't know. I think it'll be, you know, it'll be fun to have it happening in November. And you know, if the season's truly starting December 22nd, we can all enjoy those Christmas Day games. And we can rank which ones we're going to watch, which ones we're going to ignore. And I'm hoping that happens, Mike.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to happen. And simply because of the timeline of wanting to get back to a normal season. And I know that this proposal that they've talked about, which is playing 72 games rather than 82 games, also puts them on track to be finished in time for the Olympics, which, if I'm not mistaken, I think I read it in this article here, which would enable them to see where I saw the Olympics. Anyway, I thought I saw July 23rd would be when they need to be done in order to be able to start the Olympics. And I know, like I said, if it wasn't for the foreign players, I think that the NBA would be okay with not having NBA players represent the U.S. in the Olympics. But I think those players who are from other countries are going to want to play and participate, and clearly their countries are going to want them to play and participate. So it seems to me that being done by the Olympics, although it certainly isn't a prerequisite, it's certainly something that I think the league is kind of taking into consideration so that they can have their players participate in the Olympics.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I still don't understand. I mean, I guess the Olympics are important. I don't, probably for more for other countries than it is for the U.S.
That's what I'm saying. I think for the U.S. at this point, I think the NBA would be completely fine with punting on NBA players participating for the United States, and you just send a college team, or you send a G League team, or, you know, you send whatever. But I think for these other countries, if you eliminate the NBA players from those other countries, clearly what they can throw out there isn't going to be nearly as good. And those players, I think, want to play for their country. I mean, part of it is, you know, we forget sometimes that if you're Luka Doncic, you're living here in Dallas playing in the NBA, but it's not your home country. So to be able to go home and play for your country during the Olympics, I think is not that it's not a big deal for these guys who play in the NBA that are from the United States, but for these players from other countries, I think it's even more important than it is to homegrown USA basketball players. So I'll be surprised if the NBA doesn't make every effort to try to get done so that players can participate in the Olympics.
Yeah. All right.
And then they also talked about, last thing on this is, okay, I don't know if you saw this, but the last thing they talked about was having a 2-week break in the middle of the season.
Yeah, no All-Star game.
No All-Star game, which is kind of interesting, because if you're really trying to compress it, not that eliminating the All-Star game is surprising. I think putting in a 2-week break is surprising. That would be something to me that it would be interesting to
pull
players on. Would you rather have that 2-week break, or would you rather spread out the 4 games in 5 nights or back to backs? Because clearly one impacts the other. If you get rid of the 2-week break, you could have more days off in between games during the season. And conversely, if you pack the games in tighter, then it gives you the opportunity to have that 2 weeks in the middle of the season, or however that falls. So I'd be curious to know what players think about that, which one they would prefer.
Well, I would also, I mean, maybe this is just me being a narcissist or being negative Nancy here. Like, Do we really want players in the middle of a pandemic to have 2 weeks off and then come back? That sounds pretty dangerous to me, Mike. I don't know. I know we're probably hoping that in March and April we've got it under control. Or, I mean, I don't know when the two-week break would be strategically timed, whether it would be the end of February or the beginning of March. But I just think that sounds like if you're going to have people going out, you know.
Yeah, well, during the season you're going to have structure, I guess is your point, right? So
So if you're taking a two-week break, what kind of structure are you going to ensure that these players are being safe and not, when they come back, damaging the structure and having things go completely haywire? That's just my thought.
Yeah, and I haven't really heard that talked about. And in all honesty, I think most everything that I've seen talked about has not related anything to COVID-19. Like, I haven't seen anything going, well, what about if somebody gets the virus? Like, we've almost assumed that the NBA has figured this thing out, but we forget that
they were in a bubble.
They figured it out because they were in a bubble. And in this scenario, obviously, they're not talking about a bubble, which opens up all the problems that baseball and football have had.
Baseball, did you see what happened tonight? I mean, I know you weren't really paying attention. We know the Dodgers won the World Series. They had to pull their star infielder in the sixth inning because yesterday his test results came back inconclusive, Mike. Okay? But they didn't report it as a positive. So then their test in the middle of the sixth game, game six of the World Series, they had to pull their player because his test from today came back positive.
Wow.
Like,
I didn't realize that. That's crazy.
Something sounds fishy there to me, Mike. Something
sounds crazy.
Awfully fishy to me, but I don't know.
That's a little crazy.
Yeah. So, all right. Is there anything else that we need to talk about, Mike, before we get to our gimmick for the night?
No, I think we covered the restart, at least what we know about it to this point. And I guess we're still waiting on a couple more coaching vacancies to be filled. And then hopefully in the coming weeks, we'll have some draft experts on to come and talk to us about some of the prospects and what they think is going to happen through the draft. And then before you know it, it'll be free agency. And then, as you said, we'll be doing some preview shows before we know it. So let's get on with our trick-or-treat Halloween gimmick that you came up with.
Yeah,
I'm excited because I really don't even understand it. So I'm ready to play the patsy in this particular podcast episode.
This is the game. So I've done some research for some random NBA facts that people probably don't know, and maybe you will impress me, Mike, and you will know the answers to these questions. But I'm going to give you a statement, and I'm going to have you tell me if it's a trick, as in it's false, or it's a treat, as in it's true. That's because I'm tricking you, or I'm giving you a treat by forming you with some fantastic knowledge.
How many of these trick-or-treats do I have to answer?
Let's go with five. How does that sound?
All right.
Five sound good?
I'm ready.
All right.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So when the NBA first came to be around 1946, okay, that it was known as the Basketball Association of America, this team, the Providence, Rhode Island, had a team, and they were known as the Providence Steamrollers, Mike. Do you think that's a trick, as in I'm making that up, or a treat?
Let's see. The Providence Steamrollers. I don't know that I've ever necessarily heard of the Providence Steamrollers. However, I do believe that clearly that the league at that point was centered on the East Coast. So it's certainly possible that the Steamrollers are a real team. I'll say that's a treat. I'll say that that's true.
It is a true statement, Mike. It is a true statement. Right. This squad lasted a total of only three seasons, putting together a record of 46 and 122.
Did they merge into another franchise, or they just disappeared?
No, I think they just disappeared into the ether. Okay. It doesn't say anything about who they merged with. All right.
One for one,
Mike. You're out of roll.
But that was strictly a guess. That was my test-taking skills showing themselves. Process of elimination.
All right. Okay. The Raptors. True or false, Mike? The Raptors were not the Raptors and the Vancouver Grizzlies were not the first NBA team to be in Canada. In fact, there was another Toronto team, the Toronto Huskies. True or false? Or trick or treat, I should say. Sorry. I've got to remember my own gimmick.
That is a trick.
No, it is a treat, Mike. It is a treat. Believe it or not, the Raptors and then Vancouver Grizzlies weren't the first NBA teams to tip off north of the border. The honor belongs to the Toronto Huskies, one of the first teams in the league. However, at that point, Canada proved to be a tough basketball market as the Husky lasted only one season, going 22-38 and missing the playoffs.
What year was that?
I don't have a year on it.
All right.
So
let me look that up. All right.
This is from Bleacher Report, Josh Benjamin. I want to give him credit for this wonderful article that I found. Don't look up Bleacher Report, Josh Benjamin.
Okay, I found it. Toronto Huskies were a team in the Basketball Association of America, which was a forerunner of the National Basketball Association during the 1946-1947 season.
They ran with the Steamrollers, man. They were worse than the Steamrollers.
All right, there you go. Probably a better name than the Raptors.
Oh, what, the Huskies? As far as making sense.
Not necessarily better just in a name, but certainly as far as making sense with Canada and Toronto.
All right, you ready for the next one, Mike?
I'm ready.
All right. Before he was an NBA player, Bill Russell had time where he played for the Harlem Globetrotters. Is that a trick or a treat?
That's a trick.
Oh, you know this one?
Wilt Chamberlain played with the Globetrotters.
Oh, yeah.
But Bill Russell did not play for the Globetrotters.
Oh, good job, Mike. I'm impressed. That one I knew.
When you're testing me on ancient Harlem Globetrotters history, I don't know. Do you know my Harlem Globetrotters story? Have I ever told you the story?
You told it. Yeah, you said it. You said it before. I'm pretty sure you...
Well, I told you the story about how I tried out and played for the Generals, but I don't think I told you my story about elementary school and my relation to the Harlem Globetrotters.
No, go ahead. This is interesting.
So this is the reason why I know some of these odd facts probably about the Globetrotters is when I was probably in, I don't know, maybe third or fourth grade, I had to give a speech, and my topic for the speech was the Harlem Globetrotters. And so I went and did a lot of research and learned about the origins of the team and Abe Saperstein and kind of just the Generals and how it all came to be with the Globetrotters. And that speech that I wrote in third or fourth grade, I put on note cards, and I continued to give that speech throughout my entire schooling career. And I actually gave that same speech using the same note cards when I was in college in a public speaking class. So I probably, over the course of my scholastic career, I probably gave that speech, I would say, 6 or 7 different times. And obviously, I added a little bit to it here and there. But I still have the original note cards. I'll have to go and find them at some point because... that I wrote back when I was a kid. So I know a lot about the history of the Globetrotters. Maybe not that I could recall off the top of my head, but certainly when I hear things, I tend to recall pretty well what the Globetrotters were all about, especially the early years, the glory years of the Globetrotters from their beginnings until the 70s when they were really kind of at their heyday.
Yeah. Do you know what number Wilt Chamberlain wore as a member of the Globetrotters? His number's retired.
His number's retired for the Globetrotters?
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. Okay, so I know he was number 13 when he was in the NBA, at least for the early part of his career.
I would go with that answer, Mike.
Okay, so then he was 13?
Yeah.
Okay, that was his number. That was his number in the NBA. It's funny because I don't know about you, but growing up as a kid, I knew – every player's number, at least all the, you know, the popular players, the all-stars, I knew everybody's number. And now when I think about players' numbers, I'm not sure that for whatever reason as an adult, like there's some numbers that I know, but I'm not sure I could tell you, like if you just gave me the NBA all-stars and said, how many of those guys could I name their number? I'm not sure I could do very many of them, whereas you could probably give me the 1987 NBA All-Stars, and I could probably name 95% of what their numbers were. So I just, for whatever reason, I'm not as focused on numbers as I was when I was younger.
Yep. All right. Next one. We got two more that we'll do today, Mike.
Okay.
All right. We all know that John Stockton has the most assists in an NBA career. But did you know that Scott Skiles dished out 30 assists and has the record for the most in a game?
That's a treat.
That is a treat. He did that on December 30th, 1990 against the Denver Nuggets. What about that? That's
and
a good
was,
one.
He was a member of the... Was he on the Bucks at that point? Or the Magic?
That was as a Bucks. Member of the
okay,
Bucks.
That's a, okay, good. I was right. My initial thought was right.
Yeah. So
Scott Skiles, Michigan State. And then longtime coach in the league as well.
All right. Next one. Isaiah Thomas scored 16 points in 94 seconds and still lost a game.
16 points in 94 seconds.
In a playoff game.
16 points in 94 seconds. I'm going to say that is a trick.
That is a treat, Mike. His Detroit Pistons are facing the New York Knicks in the fifth and deciding game of the first round of the 1984 playoffs, and he accomplished this feat to force overtime. Unfortunately, the Knicks held their ground and went on to win. 16 points in 94 seconds. No one ever talks about that. Everyone talks about the Reggie Miller thing, but that's...
Or the Tracy McGrady, whatever he scored, like 13 and 33 seconds or something.
But 60 points in 94 is pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive, I will say.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, like Isaiah Thomas is a guy who we made fun of him when it came to the Last Dance. And clearly there's a lot of things about Isaiah that from a personality standpoint that are kind of easy to make fun of. But that guy was as good as any small guard has ever been in the league. And he was a guy who was just exceedingly tough and exceedingly clutch. And I think when you look at the history of, you know, the league, he's one of those rare small guys. I mean, he's clearly the smallest guy who was ever the best player on an NBA championship team. And I think he gets lost because of what happened between him and Jordan and the fact that he didn't get added to the Dream Team. And then you think about his failings as an executive, both with the Knicks and what he did to the CBA and all the just different problems that he's had over the course of his executive career. And I think it's kind of tarnished what he was as a player. But when he was in his prime, Isaiah was as good of a scorer, as good of a clutch scorer as maybe anybody ever has been, and certainly at his size. And he was just tough. And people didn't like his team, myself included. Most people, unless you were a Detroit basketball fan, you probably didn't like – there probably weren't that many fans of the Bad Boys outside of the city of Detroit just because of the style that they played. But I think Isaiah, if his career had played out differently, maybe gone to a different team or just been associated with a different group of guys, I think he could have been perceived – a lot differently in terms of where he was talent-wise. So I was not aware of him scoring 16 in 94 seconds to, I guess in that case, tie up a game.
Yeah. All right, I'll give you one more, and then that'll be the last of it.
Okay. I'm ready.
LeBron James has the most steals in an NBA playoff game.
You're just asking me if that's a trick or treat?
Trick or treat. He had 10 steals in an NBA playoff game. Trick or treat?
Well, he's played the most playoff games of anybody, but there's a lot of other guys who have played a lot of playoff games that add up. I'm going to say that's a trick.
That is a trick. Do you want to take any guess? I'm going to guess that you're going to have zero chance of getting this right.
As to who it is that
yeah.
has 10? Is 10
happening,
is the
I'll
record?
Do you want me to give you – yeah, 10 steals is the record. Do you want okay. me to give you – I'll give you a year.
All right. Start with the year, and then if the year doesn't help me, then you can give me the team. And maybe with the team and the year, I'll be able to come up with it. So start with the –
1999.
Okay. Playoff game in 1999.
May 13th, 1999.
Latrell Sprewell.
No.
Let's see. All right, give me the team.
He's someone that I wouldn't have ever considered known for his defense.
So it's kind of like me having the steals record at Kent. Is that what you're saying?
Kind of.
Okay.
It's someone that scored a lot of points.
Someone who scored a lot of points. 1999. Tim Duncan.
No. Was Duncan in the league in 99?
I think so. I think he came in 97.
Okay.
I think. Could be wrong, but I think
so. It's an Eastern Conference team.
Eastern Conference team. Allen Iverson.
Ding, ding, ding. You wouldn't say Allen Iverson was known for his stalwart defense, right?
No, but you think of steals as being a metric that – well, you think of steals as not necessarily being a measure of a player's ability on defense. You think of it more of a guy who gambles and is quick. And so Iverson kind of fits that profile of a guy who takes a lot of chances on defense, maybe is out of position, maybe he's not a great – one-on-one individual lock-em-up defender, but a guy who is going to reach and poke and try to get into passing lanes. I think those are typically the guys that you think of as being guys who lead the league in steals, as opposed to somebody who is maybe more of a lockdown one-on-one defender. Those guys may not always top the charts of steals because they're playing more positioning and playing with their feet, as opposed to a guy like Iverson who played more with his hands and his quickness getting into passing lanes and trying to poke balls away from guys who were handling the ball in front of him. So it's not totally surprising
another
to me
interesting
that Iverson's
fact,
the guy.
Another interesting fact I learned about Allen Iverson while doing this question research is he is the only player other than Michael Jordan to have three games of 50 points or more in the NBA playoffs. That's a lie, because Will Chamberlain had 50 more than that. I didn't see his name. He was always scrolled down at the bottom. He has three games where he scored 52 points or more, and he's the only player in NBA history other than Michael Jordan to do it. Even Wilt didn't do it. Wilt only did it two times. Elgin Baylor did it once. Charles Barkley did it once. Donovan Mitchell did it once this year. Isaiah Thomas, as in like not the newer version, Isaiah Thomas did it once. But no one else, more than 52 points. He did it three times.
Iverson was a great scorer, man. I mean, he really was. And he's a guy who, again, I think also kind of gets lost because he never won a title. And people, I think in a lot of ways, kind of shoehorned him into the idea that he was maybe a little bit of a gunner and a selfish guy and a guy that you had to build a very, very specific team around. But as far as being a player who was exciting and tough and skilled, I think Iverson was definitely a guy that was fun to watch. I think Isaiah Thomas and him have some similarities from a scoring standpoint, but I think Isaiah was probably a more pure point guard, had more of a point guard mentality, whereas Iverson probably would have been better served to be a 6'5 shooting guard instead of a 5'11, quote, point guard. Because he was definitely had a scorer's mentality for sure.
Yeah, for sure. All right, that's the end of my trick or treat. We'll have to come up with some more gimmicks. I like doing gimmicks.
I like it. That was fun.
Did the premise make sense after we did it, Mike? After I explained it?
Premise made sense. Yeah, the premise totally made sense. It was fun to kind of hit some trivia and do some oddities that in the league that you think back to. Again, I think I know a decent amount about the history of the NBA, but there's clearly always things that either you forget or that you didn't know. I don't know that I ever knew that there was a team in Toronto, the Huskies, and then some of the statistical stuff you either know it or you don't. So, but it's always fun to go back and kind of think about those things for sure. So
a year from now, I'll bring this game back and I'll ask the same questions and see if you remember, Mike.
Oh, that's good. I guess I'm getting older, so who knows?
Will you remember
the
Providence Steamrollers?
Maybe my dementia will kick in. Who knows? But I think I probably would remember at least within a year.
Yeah, I was just giving you a hard time.
I know you were. It's all good, man. It is all good. All right. Well, we want to say thanks to everybody for checking out this NBA edition of the Hoopheads Pod. If you haven't had a chance to check out some of our other team-based shows, make sure you do that. So we just added Blazing the Path, which is a Portland Trail Blazers podcast. And if you've been listening, you know that we have Cavaliers Central, we have Grizz and Grind, we have Knuck If You Buck, and we have 305 Culture. So please check those out. All of our hosts on those shows are doing a great job of bringing you team-specific content. Jason and I are going to continue to do our weekly NBA pods here through the condensed offseason. And then before we know it, we'll be back previewing the 2021 season. That's going to be here before we know it. And obviously, we'll continue to crank out our twice weekly coaching episodes and interviews. We're excited about what we have to come. Got some really great people that we've already recorded with that we're waiting to release. And then
we got a Cavs assistant coach coming up soon, Mike, to share that with everyone. So
JJ Outlaw will be coming up. That episode will be coming out relatively soon. And we've got some really great guests lined up that we're excited about. And again, Hoopheads Pod, we're just going to continue to crank things out, and we're excited about where we're going. We got some exciting news that we'll be breaking sometime in the next week or two, something that we have that we've been working on here. So good times, good things are happening, and we appreciate you sticking with us and listening, and we're going to continue to try to provide you with some of the best basketball content, both NBA and coaching-wise, that you're going to find anywhere. So thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for listening tonight. We really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.